Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here and thank you for the invitation. I'll talk about the work of Andrei Bubichenko, Bogdan Stefanski and myself on integrability in the ADS3 CFT2 correspondence. And so integrability was really helpful in understanding how ADS-CFT correspondence works in its basic example. It is due to chemical force of Reynolds theory in four dimensions, but also allows to solve ADS-4 CFT precession. ADS-3 is due to ADS-4 is due to Chern-Simons matter theory in three dimensions.
So basically the way it worked is that in the gauge theory side, we can map the problem of computing the spectrum to the diagonalizing some spin Hamiltonian, and this Hamiltonian turns out to be integrable if you compute to one loop, to two loops, etc., which has always been a mystery. So there is no rational explanation why does it work. On the other hand, on the string side, the explanation existent is relatively simple. So if we consider the sigma model that describes propagation of the string in ADS5, then because ADS space is a symmetric space, the equations of motion of the sigma model are integrable. And, if we believe that quantum corrections don't break integrability, then the whole system should be integrable. So, actually, ADS type backgrounds, they belong to the special class of integrable sigma models, namely, so one has to add fermions, of course, and when one does this, then the supergeometry is that of semi-symmetric superspace. So semi-symmetric superspace is what mathematicians call superspaces that have additional Z4 symmetry. But now there are much more semi-symmetric superspaces than just ADS5 cross 5 and ADS4 cross CP3. So there should be more integrable string backgrounds. And so there should be another examples of ADS CFT that are integrable and presumably are solvable. So one example I'll talk about today is due to two-dimensional conformal field theories. So it's ADS3. Using integrability, we managed to find part of its exact spectrum, but not the full spectrum. So I will try to explain why there is no full answer. There are some differences to the better studied cases of ADS5 and ADS4. Now, the setup is well known, and first I will review this setup, and it's known since the first works on ADS CFT correspondence. So this background was discussed in the first paper by Malbasena. And basically, it arises from D1, D5 systems. So one starts with two stacks of D5 brains that intersect in two-dimensional space. So their intersection is two-dimensional. One puts there a stack of D1 brains. And in this intersection, there is a two-dimensional CFT that comes from from strings localized, open strings localized on this intersection. So the string background is obtained by taking the near horizon limit. So the near horizon geometry is a product of ADS 3 cross S 3 cross S 3 cross S 1. So we have an ADS space of radius L, and then to spheres of, in general, unequal radius. So that there is a small sphere of radius R minus, and a big sphere of radius R plus. And there is also a circle that, in some sense, decouples, and I will explain in which sense precisely. Now, the supergravity equations of motion require that the radii of these three spaces are related by triangle equality. So the inverse of squared of ADS radius is equal to the inverse of the sum of inverses of squared of the spheres. So we can draw them on a square triangle. So this would be 1 over L. This would be 1 over R plus, and this is 1 over R minus. And it's convenient to characterize this geometry by the angle here, which I'll denote by phi. So there are several limits which are in which the problem simplifies. In particular, one can take the radius of the big sphere to infinity, which corresponds to angle going to zero. And you see that the geometry remains regular in this limit. So the one sphere blows to an infinite size, but the other spheres remains finite. And then we can recompactify the remaining, so R3 to a torus. So at the end, we get ADS 3 crosses 3 cross T4. In the brain picture, that corresponds to sort of squashing these two stacks of D5 brains. So there's just one stack of D5 brains, and there are D1 brains immersed in it. And in this case, the radius of ADS is equal to the radius of the remaining sphere. So there are these two backgrounds, and they're related by a limiting procedure. Now, what is the dual CFT? Well, unfortunately, very little is known about it. So in that case, it is believed that the target space of, so this dual CFT is some sigma model, whose target space is the moduli space of instantons on T4, of abelian, of U1 instantons on T4, which is known to be a hyperkeller manifold, and so it has lots of supersymmetries, and that's why all the symmetries work. So this is some complicated sigma model, which we don't know how to solve, but there is, of course, a limit where it becomes free theory. And degenerates to a symmetric product of symmetric product CFT. So one can think of it as taking some simple CFT, making n copies of it, and then dividing by the permutation group. So this is an orbifold of permutation group, which is again basically a free CFT. And then there is a marginal perturbation on top of that. By the operator that can be constructed in this particular case, it's sort of universal. So if you have a super conformal algebra, super Virasoro, then this marginal operator can be obtained by a twist operator. So this operator interchanges two copies of this CFT, and it has dimension 1/2, comma 1/2. So if we act by erasing operators from superconformal algebra, we get the marginal operator, and there are arguments that this operator should stay marginal all the way. So there is a marginal direction. And this is basically a resolution mode of this orb fold. Now, this basic free superconformal theory depends on which kind of background we are working with. And for AdS3 cross S3 cross T4, this is just a sigma model on T4, so four free bosons plus four free fermions. For this more complicated case, this is presumably Wesomino-Witten model with a gauge group SU2 at level k equals 2. But there are some controversies about this case, so it's not quite clear if that's correct or not. So in principle, one can start with this free CFT and then do perturbation theory in lambda. Where is the parameter phi in the CFT? Let me see.
Q1 times Q5.
Right. Here, phi is 0. So the question is about this.
Yeah.
So what is phi there?
Is it hidden in N? That was my question.
Hidden in N?
Yeah.
No, it's not hidden in N.
N is always Q1, Q5.
N is always Q1, Q5. So, so basically phi is related to the ratio of prime phi to Q5. I don't know. This is, of course, an important question.
Can you calculate central charge from the gravity side?
Central charge is much, yes.
Hmm?
Yes, one can compute the central charge and see that it is...
So that's agree with this Wesomino-Witten isothermal.
But now I want to compute the spectrum of this theory. And in principle, I can do the perturbation theory as well. So this the technique was developed by Bachmann, Prastelli, and Razamat. And they considered the case where n is large. So it turns out that there is a systematic one of random expansion that resembles very much the planar expansion in Magnus theory. And also one can define so operators, local operators can be associated with spin chains.
Started by are you to follow and then look to
sorry?
It started by are you to follow the other one that you studied stuff and then
Yes. There is a lot of work on that. There was a paper by there is some literature about the perturbation theory in some product or the faults. But then I think the spin chain attempt to understand the spin chain picture was made by the Stony Brook group. And they also show that there are, they developed the counting rules of the planar diagrams that arise in this perturbation theory. And so the spin chain is the following. So there is a, at each side of the spin chain, we have the full Hilbert space of a CFT. So the CFT meaning that this basic CFT like T4 CFT. And then there are some interactions that define the Hamiltonian of the spin chain. And unfortunately, this Hamiltonian is not known. So in principle, all the tools are here, but the computation seems to be complicated. And so there's very little
feedback from the weak, from the gauge theory side. And so we try to approach the problem from the opposite direction, namely from the sigma model. So we studied strings on ADS3, cross S3, cross S3, cross S1. So somehow the spin chain is expected to be integrable, although, without writing down the Hamiltonian, you cannot tell. But the string background is described by an integrable sigma model, as I will try to demonstrate.
That's a natural Hamiltonian.
Yeah, this is the first thing that comes up to mind. But it seems that people have studied these spin chains where at each site you have a conformal field theory. It's a kind of a weird object, and you cannot imagine the rising condensed matter application, so this is not, I haven't seen anything of this sort.
Maps from one CFT to another CFT? And what's that?
So presumably there is...
They've got a bunch of series, right? So in what sense is it Hamiltonian?
So my Hilbert space is a product of... So let me call F the Hilbert space of a CFT. So it's the Hilbert space of oscillators. So this Bose 74 plus fermions. And then if I take it to... So the Hilbert space of the spin chain is the tensor power of this basic Hilbert space. So the Hamiltonian is a linear map from H to H. Right? And basically, in the simplest case, it's nearest neighbor. And so in this case, this Hamiltonian maps so it intertwines the Hilbert spaces of two CFTs. So I don't know. Probably this specialist in CFT may know that how to classify this intertwining operators. They should commute this very far. And but I don't know much about it.
So this H12 is supposed to be an expression of O11 of the exchange operator O that you called O11 before?
No. So there is a long way to compute H from this. So construct the basis of operators in the free theory, then compute their mixing matrix. And so the mixing matrix is basically this Hamiltonian H. So from previous experience, we expected to have this form with nearest neighbor interactions. One could have tried to guess this, but there is no clear-cut way to do it. Well, there is a series of operators that commute with H, high conserved charges. Describe interaction of three spins, four spins, etc. Okay, so this geometry is, it of course, is supported by the Ramon-Ramon flux, and okay, so let me write it down explicitly. It's a three-form flux, which is proportional to the area forms of these three-dimensional spaces that enter the geometry.
And since we have the Ramanujan flux, we cannot use an SR string. We need to use the Green-Schwarz. So which leads to complications, as usually thought. But on the other hand, it also leads to integrability. For instance, in ADS5 and in ADS4. But now there is a, so there is a little difference to the, for instance, the ADS5 process 5. And let me explain what is the difference. The difference is that there is an S1 factor in the geometry that sort of lives its own life. Okay, so the schematic form of the Green-Schwarz action is, well, it's just a sigma model. So there is a metric part. And then the fermion Lagrangian typically looks, very schematically looks like that. So there is a kinetic term for fermions. That's not really a kinetic term because it's linear in X. So that's why Green-Schwarz string cannot be quantized in the conformal gauge. It's because this, otherwise this looks like an interaction vertex. One has to fix the Lightcomb gauge where dx has an expectation value. So then this becomes a normal kinetic term. And then there's the term that describes interaction with the Ramanujan flux, or coupling of the Ramanujan flux to the world sheet, which is basically the contraction of the flux with the Dirac matrices. Sorry?
The flux. NS flux.
Yes, so there are deformations of this background with NS and S flux. So we can replace part of the Ramanujan with NS and S. And when there is no Ramanujan flux, the model is solvable by standard CFT techniques.
And it works with parameter lambda, is exactly.
Well, this is sort of, there are lots of moduli. So there's one moduli in this NS and S direction, and at that point, everything is solvable. So there is another
So this modulus corresponds to the, if you wish, to the overall radius of the geometry, like in ADS5 cross 5, the hook coupling corresponds to the overall radius of ADS. So this has nothing, this is not the, this doesn't correspond to the flux. So I'll be interested only in this pure Ramanujan point. And now, okay, so it turns out that for this particular flux, if one contracts with the Dirac matrices, the result is a projection operator. So one can, well, it's a simple exercise in Dirac algebra to show that this is a projector. And this action also has a fermionic kappa symmetry. That's a gauge symmetry that allows to eliminate half of the fermions. So we can use this projection operator to eliminate the physical fermion degrees of freedom and to fix the kappa symmetry gauge.
Here I'm dropping higher orders. So now what happens in this gauge? Well, then we should look at this term. And you see that this term couples thetas to all the axes
because, okay, so they're just contracted with the gamma matrices. But remarkably, this projector satisfies the identity that it projects out the ninth direction. So ninth direction is by definition the direction in this X trace one. And so you see that if you plug in the Kappa symmetry gauge condition here, then the remaining physical fermions decouple from this X-trace one. So X9 completely decouples. And so what do we get in this gauge? Well, so what is left? Well, X9 does not interact with fermions after gauge fixing. It doesn't interact with bosons because in the geometry there is no metric, as the metric is completely diagonal in X9. So we have one compact boson. Corresponds to X9. And what is left is a Green-Schwarz type sigma model. Whose target is ADS5, ADS3 cross S3 cross S3, and it has 16 supersymmetries. Well, why 16? You know, so the original Green-Schwarz section has 32, but when we fix Kappa symmetry, we break half of them. So 16 supersymmetries are left. And by analyzing the killing spinners on this background, it was realized that these 16 supersymmetries are organized in terms of two quarters of exceptional Lie super group G21 alpha. Which is basically the rigid part of the super n equal 4 super conformal algebra in two dimensions. So it's at the same time the symmetry of the boundary CFT. And so this algebra can be understood as a as an interpolation between the classical superalgebras of PSU type and OSP type. So if we take alpha, if you set alpha to 1, so alpha here is related to the angle phi in the geometry by this relationship, so it's cosine squared of phi. So setting alpha to 1 corresponds to setting r plus to infinity. So this is precisely that limit when the geometry becomes ADS3 cross S3 cross T4. And then the superalgebra degenerates to a product of two PSU 1, 1 slash 2 algebras. Or in the other case, when we set alpha to 1 half, and that corresponds to angle alpha being 45 degrees. So in this case, the spheres have the same radii. This algebra is just, or this supergroup is becomes OSP 4 slash 2. And there is a continuous deformation of the algebra that's denoted by D21 alpha. So what is this Green-Schwarz sigma model? It turns out to be a coset. So this sigma model is a coset of, well, of the symmetry group, of its global symmetry group, over the diagonal bosonic subgroup of the product. So the bosonic subgroup of this algebra is the same as bosonic subgroup of OSP 4.2, which is SL2R cross SO4. And this is diagonally embedded in the tensor product. So if you take this coset and construct a Green-Schwarz section using this this standard coset, or more or less standard coset construction, then we get what we obtain by fixing the kappa symmetry in the Green-Schwarz section on ADS 3 crosses 3 crosses 3. But you see that in the process, we sort of decoupled 1 degree, we lost 1 degree of freedom. So not, I mean, we have an extra compact free boson on top of it. And this is the difference to the previously studied cases.
Compatible with arbitrary motions? In
no, it's, no, it's the same as what you discussed in AES 4 cross CP3. So the string should move on all, everywhere. So the motion should contain motion in S1, S3, S3, maybe S5.
Everything.
Otherwise, the kappa symmetry becomes simple.
Okay, so this coset has an extra Z4 symmetry, which is very crucial for its integrability. So for this reason, it turns out to be integral. So let me just say a few words how this Z4 cosets are constructed. So suppose that we have a supergroup, and we build a coset of the supergroup over its bosonic subgroup. This bosonic subgroup is invariant under certain automorphism of the algebra. So there is an automorphism which you consider to be an automorphism of the Lie algebra of G. So this small g is the Lie algebra of the group G, such that this automorphism has degree 4. So it squares to the its fourth power is the identity. Then, well, we can diagonalize the Z4 charge. And this defines the decomposition of the algebra into four subspaces. So in general, we also demand that the grading is compatible with this Z4 decomposition. So two of these subspaces are bosonic and two are fermionic. And then, so this is what's called the semi-symmetric superspace. It's a generalization of the notion of symmetric space that makes use of supersymmetry. So in the symmetric space, the automorphism squares to the identity. But here, because of the supersymmetry, it can square to minus 1 to the F, to the fermion parity. So in supergroups, there is a natural notion of spaces that have Z4 invariants. Now, the sigma models on this type of superspaces are turn out to be integrable. And, okay, let me say how the sigma model is constructed. So one can consider to embed the world sheet in this coset, we can first embedded into the supergroup and then gauge away the gauge away H0. So the action should be invariant under right multiplications from H0. And then the action can be written in terms of the currents. And the currents can be decomposed into the four subspaces of the Z4 decomposition. So the invariant part of the current is actually the gauge field, because we need to gauge the right multiplications. So it's not dynamical, and the other three components can be used to define the action. So let me call this sigma instead of x. So the section was first written down by Mitsayev and Seitlin, and then was realized by Bershadsky et al. That this action possesses an extra Z4 invariance. Benya, Polchinsky, and Roiban then showed that the equations of motion for this section are integrable.
Not quite. So this is the Lie group, and this is the Lie algebra. Smallest Lie algebra.
No, but there you also have H2. I was asking if H0 also can include H2.
H0 will be...
There are two bosonic pieces there, right?
Yes.
And I was just asking a stupid question. Is this capital H0, is Lie group or just of one?
Just H0. Okay. So here is the action, so it's constructed geometrically for any coset, and it turns out to be integrable.
Three in the last chain.
Yes, thank you. So why is it integrable? Well, one can derive the equations of motion from this action, and then one can construct the Lux representations of this equation. So one can construct the current that depends, well, on sigma and on x, where x is called the spectral parameter. So it's, well, it starts with j mu 0, and then there's some other stuff that depends on x. I'll probably not write it down explicitly.
You have three more blackboards
than Phineas. So this last current is constructed in such a way that it's flat for any value of x. So we just take the original current that's made out of G, then it's flat by definition, by construction. But then one can sort of deform it by inserting here the coefficients that depend on X. And then, of course, it will not be flat by construction, but its flatness will be equivalent to the equations of motion. So it's basically a deformation of the original current such that its flatness is equivalent to the equations of motion. And this leads to integrability, because we can now take the holonomy of this current and integrate it around the equal time section of the world, yeah? And then take a trace.
And since this is a flat connection, we can, if we shift it backward and forward in time, because of the flatness, the trace element doesn't change. And so we get something that doesn't depend on time, on the equations of motion. And also depends on some dummy variable x in which we can expand, and then we get an infinite set of quantities that don't depend on time, so we get an infinite set of conserved charges. So the model is integrable. So then it's integrable, and what do we do with it? So first of all, we can solve the model classically in full generality. So this construction of the equations of representation of the equations of motion in terms of the Lux condition is sufficient to find all solutions of the classical equations of motions at once. And integrable sigma models are generically solvable by beta ansatz. So then in principle, one could try to derive this beta ansatz by, constructing the exact S matrix. Or I can just guess it from the classical solution, which should be a classical limit of the beta equations. And since they have a very rigid structure dictated by symmetries, it's possible to reconstruct the quantum solution from the classical one. So I will talk about this construction of the classical solution. And then the quantum solution will follow. But unfortunately, it will not be complete in this case. So the idea is that instead of studying the nonlinear equations of motion, we can study the linear problem for the Lux operator. So we can try to find the section of the Lux connection. And because of integrability, it doesn't matter at which time we solve this equation. And so we replace the nonlinear problem by the inverse of linear problem. So by knowing, so now we want to say to study the general properties of this equation, and then from these general properties we will be able to reconstruct the potential in this problem, the Lux connection, and from Lux connection we can find the current. So this is the idea how to solve the equations of motion and then actually in any integrable system. So what are the general properties of this linear problem? Well, this looks like a Dirac equation on a line. So this is a L. Is an element of the Lie algebra. So if it were SU2, then this would be a 2x2 matrix. So this is a matrix equation in one variable sigma. So it's like a Dirac equation on a line. And then since the string is closed, the potential in this problem is periodic. So this means that, in general, we'll have a band spectrum. Um, band spectrum in X. So X is sort of an external parameter in this equation, which plays the role of the spectral variable, like energy in the Dirac equation. And so in the complex plane of X, we will have some spectral pattern of allowed and forbidden zones. And as usual, the allowed and forbidden zones are determined by the analytic properties of quasi-momenta. So the dependence of quasi-momenta on energy. So quasi-momenta determine how the wave function changes when we made a translation on sigma by 2 pi. And the wave function changes by some matrix that depends on sigma. And this is the same matrix as appears here. So this matrix called monodromy matrix is indeed the monodromy of the flat connection around the circle. And so to find the quasi-momentum, we need to diagonalize it. So we can write that the monodromy matrix, it can be represented as a diagonal matrix times some unitary, well, not necessarily unitary, but the some transformation from the underlying Lie group. And the diagonal elements correspond to the Cartan elements of the underlying Lie algebra. And so the functions that appear here, the quasi-momenta, they contain all the information on the spectrum of the problem. And they have a characteristic analytic properties as function of x. So if we consider a complex plane of the spectral parameter, then in general, there'll be a set of forbidden zones at whose endpoints the quasi-momenta may have an integral monodromy, a branch point. So these are forbidden zones. And when we go around a forbidden zone, the quasi-momentum may so there can be, they can experience a non-trivial permutation. Well, this permutation should be such that the monodromy matrix, which is analytic holomorphic function of X, should remain holomorphic. And so it should belong to the Weyl group of the Lie algebra because, okay, so the Cartan generators are only defined up to Weyl transformation. So when we go around one of these points, the quasi-momenta experience the monodromy belonging to the Weyl group. And the simplest are, of course, monodromies that are just Weyl reflections. So the others will be a composite monodromy. So we'll consider only Weyl reflections. And so this picture allows to reconstruct the quasi-momenta just from knowing the structure of the forbidden zones. So in general, sometimes convenient to draw several copies of complex X plane and then these cuts will be connected on various sheets of this Riemann surface And since the monodromes belong to the Weyl group, and so there's lots of group theory involved, the structure of this Riemann surface follows the structure of the Cartano subalgebra of the underlying Lie group. So each sheet of this Riemann surface corresponds to a node on the Dynkin diagram. And they are connected. The connectedness of the sheets of this Riemann surface is precisely the same as the connections on the Dynkin diagram. And so finally, one can reconstruct P, the quasi-momenta, using only group theory data. So here, rho are some spectral densities that live on these cuts. So they are defined on just on each of these cuts on which P has a cut, and satisfy an integral equation from which they can be found. So this equation replaces the equations of motion in the sigma model, if you wish. So this is the most important equation that determines the classical spectrum of the sigma model. And so this is an integral equation. It actually has a general solution, linear integral equation of with singular kernels. They can be inverted. The equation itself is defined in terms of the group theory data. So, yes, A is the Cartan matrix, and I will explain what is S. Yes.
Because
the Lux pair that contains 1 over x squared minus 1. Some coefficients are proportional to 1. Yeah, this is basically So A is the Cartan matrix indeed. And S defines the action of the Z4 orthomorphism on the Cartan elements. Which must be linear because omega is a linear orthomorphism. So just from the group data, we can immediately write down the solution. So in this particular case, A is well, basically it's of course known that the Cartan matrix of two copies of this exceptionally superalgebra D21 alpha, whose Cartan matrix has this form. And since there are two copies, of course the Cartan matrix is diagonal, there is no, the two algebras commute, but S is essentially a permutation of the two copies of the algebra. So one can write down these equations, and let me just represent them in the graphical form. So this is the Dynkin diagram of D21 alpha. And so the first term of the equation contains two decoupled copies of this Dynkin diagram, but you see that the second term that contains matrix S will connect, will contain non-Dynkin connections in the diagram. So this represents this set of equations. And then there is a well-defined procedure how to quantize these equations. So in principle, the quantum problem is solved by beta equations. And okay, the beta equations should probably stop now, right? How much time do I have? Well, I need just 2 minutes. So, so the beta equations are have the form of periodicity conditions. For a multi-particle state that takes into account scattering and then the total energy is determined by summing up the energies of individual particles. So we need to know the two-body scattering matrix. So in an integral system, everything decomposes two-body scattering. And we need to know the dispersion relation, and so one can, so the dispersion relation, one can reconstruct it from the algebra again, because the elementary excitation is a Wolschmidt soliton, which is a BPS, actually a BPS soliton, and so its energy it does not renormalize. And so the dispersion relation are written in terms of two variables, x plus and x minus. Where x plus minus are related by the Zhukovsky map. And you see that here we see that, so this is the coupling constant of the sigma model, so they're shifted by plus minus h bar. And this x is basically the same spectral parameter that appears in the classical solution of the sigma model. So one can actually read off the S matrix by carefully looking at this equation. So in this equation, the left-hand side comes from the right-hand side. The right-hand side comes from this momentum part of the beta equations. And the left-hand side corresponds to the scattering contribution. So in the classical limit, we have infinitely many particles. And so basically, their rapidities condense into these cuts. And instead of the discrete beta equations, we have integral equations of this type. And the discrete equations can be reconstructed from these classical equations by analogy with the other ideas systems. So one can write down the corresponding beta equations, and the S matrices also follow this pattern of the Dynkin diagram. So I'll probably stop here. Thank you.
Yes. So what are the issues with the scalars which decouple by sigma?
It's completely missed by this solution. So neither this equation nor the beta equation describe this extra degree of freedom.
But if you just decouple, do we need to care about it?
It's not completely decoupled because, so physically this corresponds to solving the sigma model in the light language. And even if your action was, so it's coupled through your sort of constraints, if you wish.
But then wouldn't I just, but is it just a free field? Which is decoupled, and I just need to take care of.
Well, not quite. So in the Lancome gauge, it's not free anymore because you solve the reserve constraints, and that feeds back the interactions with this field from solving the reserve through the solution of the reserve constraints. The action will be completely nonlinear in all the fields in the Lancome gauge. But it seems that if I forget about this field, the rest is a consistent truncation in quantum mechanical.
I have a related question. I remember this background was studied in the context of large n equals for super algebra. And it was important that you have this as one factor. They all mixed into this whole structure, large n equals for super
algebra. Oh, yes, absolutely.
But somehow you are dropping it, and so what happened to that structure? It disappeared? It was important. People who like Costas
Candelis,
I don't remember,
yeah,
who was discussing this question.
Sure, yeah, that's related to what you said. And when we drop it, we don't see. So we only see this D, this D12 algebra, which is the central, which is the rigid part of the N equal 4 of the large superconformal algebra. Like as an NL professor to R for the resort. And so we only see representations of this D21 alpha appearing, but we don't see the full multiplex of super resort. So we only see the part of the spectrum which doesn't have resource, full resource.
So there could be other, like if you say some general operators in the sigma model, there could be something which is mixed and go away from your description.
Yes.
But you believe that this state is well described by this state? There is no other extra node which interact with this one.
So classically, this is consistent truncation.
Okay.
So what happens if you want to describe the full spectrum? And classically, we don't know because the string can move in S1. So this describes string moving everywhere but sitting at one point in S1.
I thought that was inconsistent with the coupler.
Actually, oh no, here, I'm sorry, so here the Kappa gauge requires that both of the spheres should be involved. This one, so the string should move on both of the spheres. So if it moves just on one of the sphere, everything becomes similar.
This one can be decoupled.
So if I took the S dual configuration of this, then you would have no shorts, NS, NS backgrounds only, and then you can write an NS half string in this background?
Yes, that is so.
So is there a relationship between that theory and...
Well, since S duality is not perturbative in the string coupling.
Yeah, no. So it wouldn't be directly related, but I'm saying, is that theory also something which is interesting in terms of integrability? Or?
There should be a continuous interpolation. So the NS and S background is solvable without any integrability. One can just do representation theory of some chiral algebra. It's in finite spectrum. This Molvasin and Guri, and also for this particular case, this was done by Elitsiu and his collaborators. So,
but it is also automatically integrable.
Well, conformal. I don't know. It's conformal.
That's it.
So it's not only conformal, but the currents are decomposing the left motors and right motors. So the current. It's a little bit more than
particularly.
Yeah, but this is very degenerate. So in particular, one cannot do the perturbation away from the NS point is singular. One cannot do conformal perturbation theory.
Is there some interpretation of this psi field that you use to solve kind of the Lax-Pierre equation?
Interpretation, not that I know.
When in CFT, they play a very important role, this, as except the degenerate fields of the CFT. And they kind of are used to solve theory in some way.
Yeah, that's... I haven't thought about that. Somehow this classical construction, psi is used to reconstruct the string configuration itself. But if you want just to conserve charges, it's enough to deal with quasi-momentum. Yeah, maybe if one wants to quantize this second model, then one needs to think of this used function.
Can you go on in like devices?
Personally, me not, but maybe someone could. I haven't thought about it. This would be a very interesting thing to do, but since we don't have a full solution that includes the massless mode.
What is your guess for how this massless mode would end up? I mean, it must couple in some way to that picture.
That's right. So this should somehow reconstruct the full Grasper mode. So in this picture, we only see representations of this D2N alpha. But then I should somehow couple them to oscillators. So, say, of this free fields and four.
So then how to do that, I don't know. And for example, you can not do coupling now, right? And you have some big equations that we coupling. If you
yes.
And now, I mean, if you're coupling the single diamond, it's very small, so you can, in principle, diamond only, and you'll be not the one that you got, right?
So you mean that these dashed links will go away?
Probably.
That's true.
And
so you are left with two copies and of the student to one alpha that correspond to left and right motors in the CFT. And this means that even so reading order the chiral and anti-chiral operators don't mix. This is, by the way, what emerges in explicit calculations. So they seem to.
But you get a 1, so you should get 1, 1/2 m² of domain, right?
Yes.
Which can be just identity and permutation problem.
Well, that wouldn't work. No, that actually, yeah, this is what more or less. But this cannot be the full.
But that trip reduced correctly the one looks like from some subset of right for the CFT. You believe it?
Yes, I do believe it.
Even without the scale.
Any further questions? Yes, thanks.